Good morning and welcome back to our water cooler chat. If you've visited with us before, if not, welcome. We started this series about a month ago and we've been covering topics in the clinical supply world. Rich has been absolutely phenomenal in giving us information on different topics around the world. And we've actually been traveling with Rich around the world too. He was able to give us some insight on imports into Japan a couple of weeks ago. And we've also been talking about EU compassionate use in the EU. Today, we're going to be talking about importing clinical supplies into China. And Rich has been doing that for over 10 years. So he knows the ins and outs of importing clinical supplies into China. For those of you who don't know, Rich is our senior manager of global logistics. He is our vault of information, so we are very lucky to have him here. So a few logistical items. We have our chat tool, chat icon on the toolbar. If you have any questions, please feel free to find your way to the chat bar and write in questions, and Rich will answer them as they come up. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Rich.
Thanks, Marissa. First, thank you all for deciding to spend a little time with me this morning. Hope everyone is doing well. I hope everyone is staying safe, and if you're in a state that started to relax their social distancing guidelines, that you're still wearing your masks and washing your hands and staying safe, because everybody needs to keep focusing on that, and hopefully no one will suffer too much from the nonsensical virus that we're having to deal with right now. So I hope everyone's safe and doing well, and again, thank you for your time. So today we were going to talk about China. So if you have been around long enough in clinical supplies game, you remember the acronym BRIC, B-R-I-C, which was supposed to be the countries that were the future of clinical trials. These four countries were going to be in everybody's study. They were going to be the international benchmark countries for establishing the next generation of clinical trials. Kind of ironic, because out of those four, they still remain, all of them still remain relatively complicated and difficult to run your trials in. Brazil, Russia, India, China. None of them have actually gotten easy. None of them have really fulfilled the role that was projected for them 10 years ago. For various reasons, each country has its own reasons for not having fulfilled those expectations. But so we thought we'd talk a little bit about China today. Again, if you have any questions, please type them into the text box, and I will answer them as they scroll by. If you do see me looking away from the camera, it's because I'm trying to read the questions. So I apologize for that. I don't have a teleprompter. I ordered one, but IT wouldn't foot the bill for it. So. China is just moderately challenging in terms of their requirements because they're very unique. There are a couple of different parts of setting up your shipments into China that you have to do that aren't required anywhere else in the world. There are also a couple cautions that you may want to keep in mind when you're deciding whether or not to add China to your study as a fundamental country. There are some huge benefits to running your study in China. Number one, massive population. And that population is in urban areas. So you can get a potential patient population that exceeds several US states in just one city in China. And most of the potential patients are going to be naive to a lot of different treatments because the Chinese healthcare system is not very strong in terms of providing new and investigational studies. Sorry, I lost my train of thought for 2 seconds. So you get the upside of running your study there can be huge because you have a huge patient population that has a very low standard of healthcare, and you have the demographic genetically of a completely, you know, unique set of patients. So your upside for China can be huge. The flip side of that, like I said, is there are some problems. There are some difficulties. The first part of where you can run into some issues with China is just getting your import permit. There is a pretty substantial set of documents that you need to be able to supply in order to apply for your import permit. Some of them are completely normal, 100% standard, C of A, C of C for your manufacturing process, a certification of your manufacturing facility, and of course the actual CTA itself that was issued when you applied to run the trial there. The catch for all those things is they have to be translated into Mandarin Chinese. All your documents have to be in Chinese. So some of them already would be. Your CTA, of course, is, you know, it's going to come from the Ministry of Health, so it's already in Chinese. But your C of A's for all your materials, any type of other documentation that you need to get from your manufacturers if you're dealing with any sort of organic substances or anything like that, they all have to be translated into Mandarin Chinese before you can get your import permit. There are services that can do that for you if your CRO can't help you with that, but a lot of times the in-country office of your CRO can help facilitate that for you. You need to be able to provide your package insert. You need to be able to provide your label text, all those things ahead of time, because what the part of the inspection process that is going to take place is a very rigorous verification of what's on your invoice and what's on your labels. And those things have to match. What's on your invoice and what's on your labels have to be the same. So you have to be able to provide all that up front. And those are the easy ones to get. And that's where we get to the more complicated ones. The first difficult thing to obtain is what's called a certificate of origination or of origin, or a COO document. What that is a letter that's issued by the government of the government agency that oversees the area that your manufacturer is located in. So it's typically, if you're, say your material is being manufactured at PCI Rockford, you would need a certificate of origin from the Chamber of Commerce for Rockford, Illinois, saying that, you know, this business exists in our jurisdiction, and they are licensed to perform X, Y, and Z as a function of their business. Again, not an overly complicated document in terms of, you know, what it actually contains, but it's not something that you would normally get. It's not something that any other country in the world, as far as I know, requests. And if your local government isn't accustomed to providing it, it might take a little bit of time to obtain, and then, of course, get translated into Chinese. The next item that, again, is completely unique to shipping into China is what's called a first leg airway bill. The first leg airway bill is essentially the bill of lading that existed or was used when the material you're importing was shipped from the manufacturer to your packaging vendor or your storage and distribution vendor, wherever it went on its first trip. They want to see that airway bill. Reason for that is they want to see that airway bill is going to have the actual cost that you paid for it. And they want to see what that actual cost is. They want to see how much you paid for that product to make sure that your invoice price that you've declared for customs purposes on your import into China is actually, they actually want it to be less than the real value. China actually has a part of their trade agreement with the United States is that our pharmaceuticals have to be valued at less than market value in order to import them into China. But at the same time, they don't want you to devalue it so far that they're not going to be able to collect taxes on it. So the valuation question is always a fine line with China, but you have to have that proof of what your cost was so that you can't devalue it to a point where they're not collecting the taxes they want on it. So if you're not aware that you're going to need that, it might not necessarily be something you have handy and at your disposal to submit with your import license packet. So again, not something that's overly difficult to get or something that has like difficult information on it, but it's just something that if you're not aware that you need it, it could get in your way as far as you not having it when you do need it. That's pretty much the paperwork, you know, the C of A, the C of C, the certificate of origin, first leg airway bill, label text, a copy of your CTA, package inserts, all that material in Mandarin Chinese gets sent over for the import license application process. Once the import license is issued, you have 2 weeks to make your shipment. That's the length of the permit, only lasts for 2 weeks. So you have to get your material there in a 2 week window after the permit is sent back. At that point, the next set of hurdles comes in, okay? The first one is related to expiry dating, okay? China will not allow any material into the country that does not have at least 12 months of shelf life on it from the date of import. So if you have material that does not have stability done and stability and testing and proof of that testing, to say that your material is at least going to be viable for 12 months after it reaches China, they're going to reject that shipment. They're not going to allow that into the country. And that's all part of their inspection process during the customs clearance. If they see that expiry dating not matching up for a year, they'll reject the shipment. It'll have to get sent back to you know, the country of origin, and either that or they'll destroy it in China. But usually that kind of thing is only a problem for, you know, phase one or phase two trials where you don't necessarily have a lot of stability testing done and a lot of bench testing done on your product. Once you get up into the stage threes, or even into stage fours, you're already looking at, you know, 2 years of expiration on your material anyway, or you are working on, you know, extending your time from a previous date. Next, then that brings us to what has gotten better, significantly better, I would actually say, over the past couple of years. There used to be a provision in China, Chinese trade, where anything that you shipped there, one kit of your material, one package of your material was going to be taken during the customs clearance process and not returned. It was called, it was being taken for what was, they were calling state identity testing. I'm happy to say that that actually doesn't happen anymore. Because what was really actually happening was they were just reverse engineering your molecule or your material so that they could create their own copy of it and sell it themselves and use it themselves without any payment to you as the owner of the medication. They did not respect our intellectual property laws. They did not inspect our patent laws. And the way their legal system was structured, you as the sponsor, let's say you shipped your material over there, they took a kit, they were able to reverse manufacture it, start making their own, you know, tablets and or their own capsules full of your medication. You didn't actually have a legal recourse to stop them until their material got approved. So all the while that they were putting their new drug, which they stole from you, through their testing process, you couldn't stop them. You couldn't do anything about it. So the material was getting into the market. It was getting into doctors' offices. It was being handed out during their clinical trials, and you had no recourse until they actually went to get it approved. That was the point in time where you could actually file an injunction. So how many years go by in that span of time, and how much material did they make that they're now selling on or distributing off the books that you should be getting paid for, that you own, and you're getting nothing for it? So again, the good news is that state identity testing kit retention has stopped. They don't do that anymore. And they have also, as of February of this year, there's been a significant change in just our general trade agreements, where their intellectual property laws, their patent laws, didn't apply to medication. They now do apply to medication. And the bit about not being able to get an injunction against their use of your molecule until it was approved has also been changed to be much more aligned with our laws, that, you know, if someone starts, you know, manufacturing a copy of your material, you can stop it instantly. There's no longer that huge multi-year waiting period before there's anything you can do about it. I do see a question popped up down here, so I want to answer that real quick. For the import permit, if it expires after 2 weeks before you're able to import the material, is there a route for permit renewal? You have to start the process again. You would have to start the process again. If you don't get it in during your window, you do have to start over. The good news about that is the actual application and issuance timing is very quick. Once you have all your paperwork and your documents together and you can send and submit them for the import permit, you usually get it within a couple of days. So in the event you didn't get your shipment out in 2 weeks, you wouldn't end up, you know, it's not like you know, Argentina, where you're waiting 6 weeks to get your import license approved. It is relatively quick. So if you did need a second one, you're not going to be that far behind in terms of moving your material. How long does it take to obtain the import permit from the date of application? Oh, I just answered that. Are there any exceptions due to COVID-19's flight schedules being reduced or canceled? I haven't seen any issues with flights getting in and out of China, particularly because the amount of trade that goes on between the U.S. and China, as everybody knows, is very substantial. And there are cargo flights that there's no interruption to cargo flights. One of the things that I did as soon as, you know, countries started closing airports and borders and saying we're not going to take people coming in from this country or that country, is I went back to our couriers and I said, okay, how are we going to get around this? Do we have access to planes that are still going to be able to move? And we've made arrangements with our courier partners to get access to cargo only flights. And those cargo flights are not interrupted at all. So we haven't seen any kind of issues with getting our material into the country. There was a period of time right around the Lunar New Year where the entirety of operations within China was closed down. They used the holiday of the Lunar New Year to, I think, try to flatten their own curve, because they extended it for an extra week and a half to give them like a 15-day break from activities. And again, I think that was their way of trying to flatten their curve a little bit. But since that period has passed, operations at our depot partner in Beijing are back to normal. They are making any of the shipments and deliveries that we need to make, you know, of course, using social distancing and contactless delivery and things like that. But no, there haven't really been any interruptions beyond that extended Lunar New Year period, which is already over. Please, again, if you have any questions, just pop them into the chat, and I will absolutely come down to answer them as they scroll up. So back to the patent laws and intellectual property regulations. Again, these rules just changed in February of this year. And what they've done is they've, as part of the new agreement with the U.S., they've brought their intellectual property rules, especially as they pertained to medications, much more into alignment with our own. So I feel like a lot of the concern that I used to have on your behalf, as your, on behalf of your customers, that's going away now. And they are at least on the surface, there are a lot more protections for you to ship materials over there. I literally worked with customers who, when I explained that whole state identity testing scenario, they took China right off the table in terms of running their study there because they didn't want to risk their molecule getting black market stolen and sold on the black market. So a lot of those protections are in now. There is still a very intense inspection during the customs process where, like I said, they are going to inspect your kits. They are going to verify that the material, the information that you sent as part of the import license is exactly what your is in your package. So that process takes a couple of days. It's not, going to be any prolonged or extended amount of time, but it is very rigorous, and it is a couple of days worth of time. And there are, as long as you use the right airports, there aren't concerns with having your material stored at the airport while that's happening. And our couriers are well acquainted with doing that and take all the necessary precautions for temperature controls and things of that nature. So I guess the moral of the story is what was once a country that, was something you wanted to really think about and maybe avoid because of the way they're structured around the import process, where you had to weigh the risks to you and your material and your profits against that huge upside that I talked about at the very beginning of a massive patient population with a substandard healthcare system. It used to be a much tougher balancing question in my mind. Now, with the new regulations, with the stricter enforcement of intellectual property respect and patent laws, that I feel like that is adding to the reasons why China can be a viable choice for you in your country selections for your studies, because you could take a lot of that risk and a lot of that concern away from where we were just a couple of years ago. That pretty much covers what I had prepared to talk about. If anybody has any other questions, we have a few minutes left that I'd be happy to answer them. There we go. If the CRO in China has to translate documents into Mandarin, how much time should you allow in your planning? That's a hard question for me to answer because every CRO is going to be different. If you have a larger, international CRO, they have departments that do those translations for them internally. Other CROs outsource it. So it really depends on your CRO. I've never seen it take more than a week to get those documents translated. Again, because most of them already are in Chinese or they're like a multi-language thing, like a booklet label that has English and Chinese already on it, or the package insert already, if it's a commercial medication that you're using as a comparator or a rescue med, it's got a package insert that might already be translated as well. So I've never seen anything, I've never experienced a delay in getting a permit and getting a shipment out based on the translations. But as far as the exact amount of time, again, that's really going to be dependent upon your CRO or whomever you get to do the translations for you.
So, Rich, I think you were planning on speaking about moving clinical supplies between China and Hong Kong.
Ah, thank you. I can absolutely talk about that. So, Hong Kong is interesting. So, if you're not familiar with the history of Hong Kong, in 1999, a 100-year lease to the United Kingdom expired, and the island of Hong Kong, which to that point had been a part of Great Britain's, you know, Commonwealth, reverted back to the control of the Chinese government. The government, because Hong Kong at that point was so financially powerful in a global scale, they left China, or they left Hong Kong as a free economic zone. So the same regulations, rules, and financial structures that exist in China don't actually exist in Hong Kong, even though Hong Kong is technically part of China. Now, what does that translate to for you in terms of your clinical supplies? China, mainland China, is one of the countries that is a type of country where once you ship something in, it never comes back out again. You can send material to China and you cannot use that material in any other country. They can't ship to Japan or South Korea or any of the Southeast Asian countries. Material for China goes to China, stays in China. The exception to that is, if you're, so, you know, our depot is in Beijing, they can ship to sites in Hong Kong because coming into Hong Kong, they're still in China. Now, if you want to have sites in Hong Kong, but not in mainland China, those sites in Hong Kong can be supplied from more or less anywhere in the world. Regional depot in Singapore or Australia, or even directly from the United States or the United Kingdom. So you can ship directly to a site in Hong Kong because, again, the free economic zone makes the import process completely different, even though it's technically the same country. Shipping into Hong Kong is incredibly easy. It can be done, like I said, directly to the investigator sites without any extra depot involvement. And it can be done from anywhere in the world. You know, obviously you're going to need to take into consideration the, you know, the concepts of your temperature control and volumes and things like that to make sure that shipping from, you know, say the United States is a plausible idea. But from a logistics standpoint, it's absolutely possible where you can ship into Hong Kong without using a depot, or you could ship into Hong Kong from your Chinese depot. So just a little interesting bit of geography and geopolitics involved with that part of China. Because like I said, Hong Kong is technically part of China, but completely different set of regulations involved in shipping into there. All the, you know, the first leg airway bill, the import permit process, none of that actually applies if your sites are only in Hong Kong. Does that apply to Taiwan too? You cannot ship to Taiwan from China. Taiwan is very interesting in terms of geopolitics. China considers it part of China. Taiwan does not consider themselves part of China. You can ship to Taiwan from a regional depot in Southeast Asia directly to investigator sites. No need for a depot or whatever, but you cannot ship to Taiwan from China. Can we import? I'm sorry, I have too many things going. Can we import into Beijing versus Shanghai that allows 6-month expiry dating? Everything I've seen, the 12-month expiration is what the requirement is. I've never seen anything be allowed to be imported regardless of the port of entry. There are only a certain number of ports that will accept medication shipments, and as far as I understand it, they all enforce the same rules, with the exception of Hong Kong. The 12-month rule applies to all of them, to the best of my knowledge. All right, so that brings us pretty much up to the end of our session today. I did want to again say thank you to everyone for coming. I appreciate all of your time. I know everybody is really busy, especially with all of the changes to our industry that are going on. So the fact that you took half an hour of your day out to chat with me, I really do appreciate. Thank you so very much for coming. And I think Marissa has some remarks and some closing thoughts, so I'll go back to her.
Yep. Rich, are you able to see my screen? I'm not sure if it's sharing yet.
Yes, I am.
Okay, great, thank you. So everyone, as you know, as you may have seen earlier this week, we announced some new water cooler chats. So if you look at the screen, hopefully you can see them. So next week, Rich will be back to talk about importing clinical supplies into South America with a focus on Argentina and Brazil. And then on June 4th, we're going to be talking about extending the shelf life of drug products with our active blister solutions. That is a technology that helps to control moisture and oxygen. So if that is a concern for you, you should mark your calendar for that. On June 11th, we'll be talking about cell and gene therapies, looking at the supply strategies for that. On June 18th, our lead in our San Diego site, Mark Schapansky, will be talking about clinical supply solutions for small companies. And then on June 25th and July 9th, we're going to have a two-part lesson with Rich Nelson again and his counterpart Gavin Morgan of the EU. They will be talking about some government documents that are required, such as clinical materials evaluation and HTS coding for clinical materials. The one on June 25th will be specific to the US, and the one on July 9th will be specific to the EU. So if you're interested in any of those, please do go to pciservices.com/water and you can sign up for those. Rich, did you want to give a little teaser into what you'll be talking about next week regarding importing clinical supplies into South America?
Sure. So next week, as Marissa said, we're going to shift from Southeast Asia to South America, and we'll talk about some of the challenges, including timelines for permits and customs clearances, some specific documents and releases that are required for a couple of the countries there, and some concepts involving extended access or expanded access programs after your trials end that are unique to a couple of the countries there.
Okay. Stay tuned. All right. Thank you so much, Rich. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you next week. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Thanks again, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.